Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
If you walk into any shop right now, you'll be immediately faced with the reminder that Halloween is only days away. And one of the main things you'll find stacked on the shelves is the unassuming, the modest but much loved Barm Brack. So whether you buy it for the ring or to smother the slices in butter, what is it that makes this humble fruitcake such a treat at this time of the year? Well, to answer this question and find out more about the age-old role of food in celebrating Halloween, Tony Kane is here, member of the Irish Bakery Association and bakery specialist at Odlums, and Regina Sexton is on the line, food historian at UCC. You're both very welcome, particularly Tony now, because Tony has brought in the Barm Bracks, which were made this morning by John and Dave at Super Value in Lucan, got up early out of the bed to bake for us.
Two old bakers, so they know what they're doing.
Two old bakers, yeah, you said that now. John and Dave, he said that, not me. So what have you got here now for us, Tony?
Yeah, well, there's two types of bracks. So there's the traditional Halloween brack, which is a yeast-raised bread enriched with fruit, eggs, sugar. And then there's also the tea brack, which is quite popular. Where,
so this is the rectangular guy.
Yeah, that's the rectangular, well. Yeah. Usually the Halloween one is round, and the tea brack is usually long or oblong, you know. But they're two very unique Irish products, which is... and. I feel that they're cherished around this time of year. You know, they're certainly very popular, and it's nice to have a Halloween brack on the table at Halloween.
The Barm Brack is a sort of a light cake, isn't it?
Well, it's a bread that's enriched
with the fruit and the nuts.
Well, yeah, with eggs and sugar, and then you make a dough, and then you add your fruit, your sultanas, your raisins, cranberries, apricots, wherever suits you. I like nuts in them. I like walnuts or hazelnuts. I think it's nice to have. And it's yeast raised, so it's quite a little bit difficult maybe to make at home for some people, whereas the tea brack is a easy peasy.
You know, you're soaking the fruit in the tea.
Yeah, it's really important to make a good strong brew of tea, a sweet brew, you know, and soak your fruit, your sultanas overnight in that, and they plump up. And then you add your flour and your egg and your baking powder, and it's as simple as that. And your spice.
It's a simple one, and it is absolutely delicious. Yeah. The tea brack, which is your favourite? Are you willing to say?
I like both of them. You know, never buy off a tin baker. So that's the tea brack, which is really, really moist, and this is the traditional round. Halloween brack that usually at this time of year has a little token in it for fortune telling, really, I suppose.
Well, Regina, that's where you come in, and you're very welcome to the programme. Lovely to have you with us, because years ago, all sorts of things will be put into that brack, wouldn't it, for us to find?
Good morning, Claire, and I'm only sorry I'm not there with you today.
You're missing out. You're missing out.
Yeah. We could be tasting and talking, but there you go. Yeah, so I think, as you said at the top, if you walk into any shop at this time of the year, the brack is still there. And I think it's a testament to its heritage value that it's still there amongst all the other things that are now on offer. And I think that does say something about an Irish attachment to this very traditional festive bread that's attached to Halloween, but would also have been attached actually to Christmas and to Twelfth Night in the past. And in the past, I suppose its significance and its charm, if you like, was because of the entertainment value or the play value, or more seriously, I think, in other ways, the symbolic value of the things that were included and baked into the bracks.
Yeah, and we're all familiar with the ring, of course, as, you know, being hidden in there. But there was a time when there were all sorts of symbols inside in the Barm Brack.
There was, and I'm sure that Tony remembers this as well. And I, growing up as a child, we really relished when Halloween came around, because the charms were signalled on the wrappers of the bracks. And then, of course, there was the whole excitement and trepidation around slicing it to find maybe the ring, which would symbolise marriage within the year, if you got it, or you'd be the first to marry, perhaps. The P was to symbolise a life of poverty.
Oh dear.
The bean was going to be on the opposite side, was going to be a life of good fortune. The rag was going to be a symbol or a portent of future raggedness, I suppose, uncertainty in that regard. The button was that you were going to be maybe a bachelor or a spinster. And this one, I think, which stands out for us today as being quite significant in its inclusion and the meanings, the stick, a little stick was included that symbolised a future beatings by your spouse in a marital context.
I think we're delighted that we're now dealing with the ring more commonly. But Tony, you have to be careful as a baker what ring you're putting in there. Has to be a good sturdy ring to survive the oven.
Yeah, we were just talking about it this morning in the bakery, and Dave was reminding me of an American gentleman came in, and he didn't know the tradition of rings in the brack, and he said he thought one of the bakers had lost a wedding ring.
Oh, he was coming back in to return it, was he?
To give out, yeah. But as Regina said there, I just picked up on the bean.
Yeah.
And it was, as Regina said, it's a sign of wealth. And it's where that saying comes, I haven't a bean.
Of course.
You have no, you know, so it's all.
But in your career, would it always have been the ring that you'd put into the bar rack? Because that's what we expect, isn't it?
Commercially, there's some bakeries around the country still putting the ring in. I know Toomey's and Stapleton's and Neville's and all them bakeries and Stafford's, they all still do the ring, which is great. I think it's good.
It's great fun when you find the ring in
the
bar.
Yes, exactly. You know, I mean, if the French can do that, they have an epiphany cake, the Galette de Bois, you know, where you get a porcelain figure in your almond cake at on the 6th of January.
Right,
so
that's what they do.
We can keep it going.
And tell me, Regina, do we know where the tradition of the barn brack began?
I think there's two ways of thinking about the barn brack. There's the commercial one that we've been talking about, but that would originate in the in a house context, in a domestic context, where people at special times of the year, and this is just across the world really, that they would make a special bread or a special cake for special times. So for in the Halloween context, it's a special cake or an enriched bread to celebrate this extraordinarily complex and interesting festival that we have of Halloween. So people at home would have made the barn brack, and they would have made a version of it that was based on what they had and was based on traditional baking. So in its pre-commercial existence, it would have been an enriched soda bread, simply, as simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it would have been surrounded by this element of ritualistic practice and symbolism of foretelling and foreboding the future. And in a domestic context, they put all sorts of things into it because they could. And they weren't confined by the commercial restrictions or strictures, if you like.
So whatever they had, they were throwing into it.
Yeah, so they were, in terms of the ingredients, first of all, but you know, usually it would be kind of fruit and all sorts of stuff. To give you this term, a speckled brack, bread, bearing breck.
Mm-hmm.
And they also then accompanied that with a whole array of charms, like thimbles were put in, sloes were put in to symbolise death, nuts were put in, like hazelnuts, holy metals, which would predict life and religious vocation, and all sorts of other things that kind of didn't make the leap from the home kitchen to the commercial kitchen, if you like.
Now, there are other traditions as well. And I have to admit, I didn't know about this tradition around Colcannon, where people were putting it into their socks and all sorts. Regina, what was all that about?
And I think, I suppose, the real anchor for food in an Irish context for Halloween is Colcannon, that fantastic mashed potato dish with loads of butter and cabbage or kale. And that one, I suppose, took central focus as the divining dish for Halloween. So there was a pre kind of ritual around it where the girls would pull the heads of cabbage in the little vegetable plots and test them, the heads of cabbage and the roots to foretell their future husbands. And then that sort of line of thinking continued into the consumption of the dish, but also to taking like the first spoon of Colcannon and the last spoon of Colcannon, putting it in your sock, hanging it on the door, waiting for the first man to come inside the door, and that would be the future husband.
isn't that just outrageous?
But they also brought them to bed with them, but we mightn't get into that one.
The socks or the men that came through the door?
Well, I suppose aspiration and intentionally, both.
Oh my gosh, let's come back to the barn brack quick, Tony. When would you soak the fruit in whiskey now to make a barn brack?
Yeah, well, if you prepare the fruit the day before on either type, it's good. The fruit should be washed in warm water and it releases a kind of an oil that's around the sultanas.
Well, you would always do that, would you, with fruit?
You should do, even if you're making a cake, Christmas cake, it's a good idea to do it. But it has to dry then, you know, so, and that's when, after it's washed and it's warm, then put on your whiskey or your rum or whatever, and or your tea, you know. So, but especially for the tea brack, it's soaked in the tea for 12 hours at least.
But if you're doing the soaking in whiskey, are you doing that to get the flavour of the whiskey in your barm brack, or is it more for the texture of the fruit?
No, it's to give you the flavour of whiskey, you know. So the sultanas or whatever soaks up the whiskey or the rum, and when you bite into it, you get that flavour, you know.
And how are you getting that gorgeous shine on the top of those barm bracks?
Yeah, well, you could use a simple stock syrup, which is just sugar and water. I've used an apricot glaze and just heated it up and glazed the top.
A bit of apricot jam, is it?
Apricot jam, just, you know, heat it up gently and just glazed on top. Mm-hmm. It gives it a nice shine.
It does. It really does make a big difference.
It makes it more appealing, really, you know, and it's like the sticky buns, really, in their childhood.
But you said earlier that you think it might be a tricky one for us to make at home.
Well, it's just, you know, it's a yeast raise one, the Halloween one is. And it can be a little bit tricky incorporating the fruit, because you don't want to break down the fruit. You have to be real gentle with it, certainly on slow speed, or if you're doing it by hand, gently, that it's incorporated.
Okay. Regina, I want to talk to you finally about box tea. We've had the Colcannon now and the sock, and we've had the barm brack. Box tea has connection to Halloween too, does it?
It does, as do potato puddings. And box tea is, as we know, this kind of type of grated potato made into a potato cake. And that has a particular association with the northwestern counties, the western counties and some northern counties. So that would have, and that could have been enriched as well with the addition of a little bit of spice, like caraway seed. So that was included in the Halloween list of festive dishes in those areas, as were a very unusual dish of potato puddings. This kind of mashed potato that was left to cook for a long time, associated with Ulster. So there is a regional dimension to our festive foods, which is very, very interesting from a cultural perspective. But the two ones I think that have universal appeal and legacy are Colcannon and the barm brack.
And the barm brack and the bobbing for apples as well, which we didn't get to. Yes, but I suppose it's obvious, isn't it, that the apples are plentiful this time of the year. So when you have a bit of a break or a bit of a holiday or a celebration, children then would find what they could to play with.
Exactly. Apples for all of those games of divination and sport. I mean, it was a celebration and it was a kind of a time of merriment and to do the things outside normal patterns. Fruit. Apples, nuts, like hazelnuts.
All of that used for games. Regina Sexton at UCC, thank you so much. And Tony Kane from the Irish Bakery Association. And a special thank you to John and to Dave, the young bakers out in Super Value in Lucan. Thank you so much for being with us. That brings us to the end of the programme, which was produced by Ronan Coveney. Research by Cormac Burke. Our broadcast coordinator today is Mary Elizabeth Bruton. And on sound was Paul Murnock. Over to Neil.